Good morning. My name is Tina Johnson.
Great, and I'm Elise Wisniewski, and as stated before, Tina and I are both research specialists at CeaseFire at the University of Illinois at Chicago. We have no relationships to disclose.
So we're just going to begin by giving a quick background on what CeaseFire is. CeaseFire is a public health approach to reducing shootings and homicides, and CeaseFire works in the areas of Chicago with the highest rates of violence. The model prevents violence through a three-pronged approach: identification and detection, interruption, intervention, and risk reduction, and changing behaviors and norms. And for the purpose of today's presentation, we'll focus on just one component of the model, interruption and intervention, and this is accomplished through conflict mediations done by violence interrupters. And violence interrupters are individuals with great knowledge of the streets whose primary goal is to de-escalate potentially volatile conflicts. Oftentimes, violence interrupters are working in the neighborhoods that they grew up in, and given their street backgrounds, violence interrupters are uniquely equipped to identify and connect with some of the most influential individuals in the streets. And they're also trained on conflict resolution as well as mediation.
All right, so our presentation today details only the beginning stages of our research. So in the first stage, we used archival programmatic data from our conflict mediation forums, which Tina will describe in further detail in future slides. We generated descriptive data on the nature, cause, outcome, and other situational factors in conflict mediations. And our ultimate research goal is to inform CeaseFire staff training in conflict resolution and in our own future data collection efforts. So we have two research questions in mind today. First, what does a high-risk situation look like? As defined by CeaseFire, a high-risk situation is one that is very likely to lead to a shooting. Second, we ask, how do CeaseFire workers prevent or stop a shooting?
So we focus on just two areas for this study. While CeaseFire operates in 18 Chicago communities, the analysis deals with 2009 and 2010 conflict mediations for our two model sites, which are located in District 7 on the south side and District 11 on the west side. So as our model sites, these two communities receive the most consistent funding and therefore produce the most consistent data. So for our methodology, we looked at conflict mediation forms. These forms are filled out every time a conflict is mediated, and they're filled out by the violence interrupters. They consist of both closed and open-ended questions. On these forms, the violence interrupters answer questions regarding location of conflict, date of conflict and mediation, risk factors of parties involved, reasons for conflict, and other descriptives. We coded just the open-ended responses. There were 368 mediations that were coded to reveal and explore common themes, relationships, interactions, and situational factors.
So this table here shows the kappa values of the most frequently used codes. We first coded cases independently and then took a systematic sample of a quarter of the cases to calculate inter-rater reliability. So in the end, all final kappa values were 0.7 or higher. All right, so now we're going to jump into the discussion of the first research question. What does a high-risk situation look like? As you can see, there are a number of different domains when talking about high-risk situations.
So the first thing that we looked at was how likely the conflict was to lead to a shooting. And this was actually a closed-ended response filled out by the violence interrupter. We found that in nearly 75% of the cases, the conflict was very likely to lead to a shooting. This is expected since the violence interrupters are mediating the highest risk situations.
So of the cases sampled, about 30% specified an exact location. And as you can see, over half the conflicts occurred in a public space. This mirrors Deanna Wilkinson's finding that a majority of injury events take place in public spaces. Wilkinson explains further that such unregulated public spaces are often the scenes of disputes involving gunplay and multiple actors. It is also worth noting here that 2010 Chicago police data show that 60% of homicides were either committed on the street, the sidewalk, or in an alley. All right, so this is a table detailing weapon presence and type. So of the cases sampled, around 50% explicitly stated weapon presence. We should bear in mind here that weapon presence does not translate into weapon use. Instead, a gun could be present as a threat, a means of protection, or self-presentation. So the majority of weapons present in our sample were guns. This resonates with Chicago police data, which states that the two leading causes of homicides in 2010 were gunshot at 80% and stabbing at 7%.
So the next thing we looked at was victimization. We defined victim as a person wronged, harmed, injured, or killed as a result of an event or action. We coded also for innocent victim, meaning the victim is not at fault and plays no active role in the incident, and also victim actively involved in conflict. We found that in 70% of the cases, the victim was a party involved. An example of this would be if someone was previously shot and wanted to retaliate. In 30% of our cases, the victim was innocent, and innocent victims included women, children, mistaken identities, or bystanders. So continuing with victimization, we also coded for number of victims. At least one victim was identified in 42% of the incidents, and of those 150 cases that specifically identified victims, the majority involved just one victim at 83%.
So ceasefire staff identify participants using a set of high-risk criteria that are believed to be predictive of violent behavior. So this table shows the high-risk factors of the parties involved in the conflict sampled. Each one of these codes, with the exception of emotional state, is used by ceasefire staff to identify high-risk individuals. Given that emotional state plays such a prevalent role in high-risk situations, this deserves further exploration in future stages of our research. Right, so this is the crosstab of number of risk factors and shooting likelihood. So as you can see, as the number of risk factors increase, the likelihood of shooting also increases.
So this might be a little bit hard to read, but this shows all the causes of conflict that we coded for. And so, excuse me. Some of these codes require a little bit further definition. For retaliation or response to a previous incident, this was action taken in return for an injury or offense. This was the most found code at 37%. Miscommunication or misunderstanding is false, inaccurate, or lack of information, or failure to understand something correctly. For disrespect, that was name-calling, he said, she said. For substance, this typically involved the sale or theft of drugs. Cheating, lying, and being set up would involve money or gambling. For outsider in the neighborhood, this would be a person that does not belong in that neighborhood or on that block. And also, multiple causes could be assigned to each incident. Another thing we coded for was antecedent of conflict. Drawing from Deanna Wilkinson's work on event dynamics, we identified several precursor events or activities to the conflict. She stresses the effect of alcohol or other substances in triggering violent reactions to perceived slights. Our research mirrors this. Half the conflicts that were coded as having an antecedent involved alcohol or drugs. As far as the code business transaction, this was assigned when parties were involved in some sort of transaction or exchange of money, substance, or objects prior to the conflict breaking out.
So we define severity of conflict as extent or degree of threat, harm, seriousness of injury. I'm just going to explain two of the codes here. So making threats consists of voicing or showing intention to do bodily harm. For example, a group might send someone to the workplace of another person as a form of intimidation. Verbal violence usually takes the form of an altercation or argument. So in 3/4 of the mediation sampled, there was some level of violence explicitly stated. Now, severity of conflict goes beyond the level of violence. Ceasefire staff often mention the number involved in the conflict as an indicator of conflict severity and magnitude. So in response to the question, why do you think this conflict would have led to a shooting, violence interrupters frequently mention the number of people involved. Wilkinson found that group involvement in conflict increases the likelihood of retaliation.
So another factor that we looked at was relationship. The social ties or relationships between parties involved are important for pinpointing the cause of the conflict and how the conflict plays out. In several of the mediation sampled, conflicts arose when defending family or a significant other. This was in 33% of the mediations. Also, in looking at relationship between ceasefire staff and party involved, we found that in 34% of cases, and that means that the parties involved specifically reached out to ceasefire staff, or the parties involved are actually on the ceasefire staff's caseload. Age and gender was another thing that we looked at. Although the majority of ceasefire's participants are young males, the demographics of the people involved in the conflicts varied. And 13.9% of the conflicts analyzed were between males and females. And scholars have also recently highlighted the increasing incidence of female violence. And we found this particularly interesting because this suggests in our line of work the focus should be broadened to also include female violence. In addition, we discovered several incidents in which involvement in a conflict spanned generations, and 6.3% of conflicts involved both younger and older generations. So an example of this would be if a parent advised a child to react violently or if the parent actually entered into the conflict themselves.
So we zeroed in on the role of third parties in high-risk conflicts. More often than not, the top two codes, involvement of clique friends or involvement of family, were in response to a call for reinforcement. So when affronted by others, people often feel constrained by the so-called code of the street to resist or seek revenge. In our sample, individuals frequently called for their people with missiles, meaning their friends or family with guns, to assist. All right, so now we move on to the second research question. How do ceasefire employees navigate these high-risk situations? So we respond to this thinking about both strategies used and number of staff involved. And we define strategies as plans of action undertaken by ceasefire staff to achieve a goal, usually resolving the conflict. So this is a table of frequency and percent of strategies used by violence interrupters in mediating conflicts. So these specific conflict resolution techniques fall under the broader umbrella of conflict mediation, and I'm just going to quickly explain some of these codes to better define them. Middleman refers to when groups don't come together. The violence interrupter is serving as a conduit of information and or communication between groups, or the violence interrupter literally positions him or herself between parties. Reasoning includes providing rationale, setting the record straight, laying out the facts, and providing alternatives to parties involved. Proxy refers to when a violence interrupter uses friends or family of the parties involved as a means of communication. And babysitting means keeping an eye on the conflict.
So one other factor that we looked at was the number of staff involved. We found that a greater number of ceasefire staff are present in higher risk situations. It is recommended in our staff training that staff do not mediate high risk situations alone, so this was an expected outcome.
Right, finally, we're going to include by just outlining some of the study limitations. One of the biggest weaknesses of the study design is the dependence on self-reported forms. Violence interrupters are completing these forms for their employers, so there's a likelihood that this could influence their ability, well, willingness rather, to report honestly and accurately. All conflicts are described from the vantage point of the violence interrupter, who may or may not be an objective observer. Another study drawback relates to the conflict mediation form itself. The fact is that our purpose of the research is to eventually revamp the conflict mediation form to make sure it's capturing all the important data. Also, ceasefire stresses confidentiality and data de-identification. This is a key component of our model, but it does make it difficult because many conflict mediation forms lack much detail about actors, events, or outcomes. Finally, we selected just a small subsample of our 18 ceasefire communities. So the possibility exists that the sample is not representative of all ceasefire communities. However, this study provides us with an important snapshot of what a high-risk situation looks like, who is involved, how players are related, and how ceasefire staff respond. All right, as far as future directions and research, we hope to do member checking with our qualitative data with some of our program staff. We eventually hope to take our findings and revise our conflict mediation form accordingly, and then we would like to recode and reanalyze data that is gathered with our revamped form. We also want to continue to direct attention to situational and personal characteristics, interactions between parties, and violence prevention practitioner response in high-risk situations to further our mission of stopping shootings and killings. Okay, and for more information, feel free to visit our website at www.ceasefirechicago.org. Thank you.
Thanks.